This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we're going to jump right to the phones. Joining us again for his regular, kind of regular visits, Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at Restoration-News.com, senior investigative reporter for Restoration of America, former Oregonian, now Florida man. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? I am actually becoming quite regular these days, aren't I?
I know. Uh-huh. Right? Right? You're just like Metamucil.
Oh, you were. I was going to try to say something, but you beat me to it. All right.
The Metamucil of newsmakers, Jeff Reynolds is on.
Well, I think
keep
we're
the
all
trains moving.
I know. That's so funny. Well, you know what? It's almost like our weather is converging, too. We're all kind of right, almost kind of getting to that 80 degree mark here. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm at 87 here on my deck in Florida.
Oh, well, we're not quite there yet. We're aspiring to that. And I think we will get there like, what, midweek?
Yeah, they were saying that there's a chance we might tick up to 80 for like a few minutes today at best. But by like Sunday, I think it's supposed to be in the 80s.
Cherish them, Hunter. Mm-hmm. Cherish them. Mark it down in your scrapbook for posterity.
There you go. Take a picture. Get a selfie. Get on social media.
Get a selfie. Get that. Take a screenshot of your little weather app there, your weather widget. Okay, we want to jump right in. Tom Fitton posted this. Oregon settles lawsuit on voter roll maintenance. Has to share data. 800,000 dirty voter names in the rolls. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like 20 or 25% of the entire voter roll in the state of Oregon. So, we've been saying this for decades, that they never clean the voter rolls. They never, you know, clear the dead people or the illegal aliens out of the voter rolls. And when we bring it up, they say that we're trying to suppress votes. It's an absurd argument. It's always been an absurd argument, but that's their standard go-to whenever a Republican says, hey, have you considered tightening up the rules on voter fraud? Oh, you're racist. Between vote by mail and these dirty voter rolls, you're inviting election fraud.
Well, and according to the Democrats, isn't everything the Republicans do racist? So who cares what they say?
Well, and
I
remember when they first kind of brought up these 800,000 votes, of course, the initial response was, well, they don't vote anyway. They don't even get ballots mailed to them. And then, of course, it became, well, the ones that do, they just get brought back because they're no longer at that address. And then it's, you know, well, we don't think they vote this and that. And I'm just kind of going, this creates a number of narratives. One, you know, what's happening with these ballots that are now just kind of piling in the streets, if you know, with these people not being there. Number two, I go, this also creates such a great narrative for the Democrats when they win and they can say, well, look at all these people that didn't vote. If these people had just voted, I'm kind of going, if they're not even voting, it creates the narrative that hundreds of thousands of people aren't voting and don't care. So they're utilizing these numbers after every election.
That's a really interesting point, Hunter.
That is interesting
from that angle, that it promotes the idea that elections are less important than they are because supposedly fewer and fewer people are participating, when in fact the stats are skewed by fake ballots.
Mm-hmm. So that potentially can blow the apathy argument out the window. Although I do know, just from sort of anecdotally and chatting with people, there are a lot of people that don't vote because the narrative is out there that the vote doesn't matter and it's always tied to end vote by mailing.
I would be interested to see if they could go back and retroactively reveal the actual voter turnout numbers in previous elections now that these ballots have been removed.
And those records are kept. I mean, I go back and look at my voting history. So, I mean, it's kept there. You know, if you're a 4-4, I mean, that's how they build door knocking lists. They know who voted in 4-4s, 4 out of 4, who votes sometimes. So that data all exists. I think that would be time well spent, actually, because if that's a false narrative, we need to bust it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But this actually speaks to a larger point that I wanted to make about blue states getting completely smacked down in legal proceedings. Blue states in general resist the idea of making their voter rolls public or putting any sort of security on them. One of our sister organizations called Voter Reference, or it's votereference.com. We publish because our CEO and founder, Doug Truax, was one of the folks that was screaming the loudest that our elections are not secure, they're not clean, and they face no transparency whatsoever. So he started this other organization to publish the voter rolls so that you can check any voter in America by going to the database and see if they voted, see if their registration is active, and all of that. So we've published, I think it's 39 states, don't quote me on this, but I think it's 39 out of 50 states. We've voted, published the voter rolls showing how many active voters there are and their participation in the last several elections. We tried to publish the state of New Mexico a couple of years ago, and they denied our request outright, even though it's supposed to be public information under the under federal law, under the Help America Vote Act or the National Voting Rights Act. Between those two laws, they are required to publish lists of the registered voters in their state, and New Mexico just flat out refused to share their data with us. So we sued them and we won in late last year. And the court awarded us our attorney fees. So the New Mexico had to pay Voter Reference upwards of $1 million for the trouble of hiding their voter rolls. They lost, and then they had to send taxpayer money to us because they were more concerned about hiding their voter rolls than being good stewards of their taxpayer money.
Wow. And that's pretty common. I mean, I think among red state, blue states, obviously Oregon being a blue state and now having to turn this over. So what do you think about as far as the SCOTUS ruling, the 6-3, as far as gerrymandering, what's that going to do? There are a lot of people out there that have some optimism today. It's like, there seems to be like a little shift in the wind here.
Well, I'll tell you what, that gerrymandering article or a discussion is a long one, but to summarize it in a nutshell, it's no longer legal to base congressional districts on race as a defining characteristic. And so that affects a lot of districts across the South that were redrawn in the 60s in the wake of the civil rights legislation of 1965, Lyndon Johnson and that Congress. And so what ends up happening is you're going to see upwards of 20 to 25 districts being redrawn in favor of Republican turnout because it's more representative of the people that are being represented in those districts. And so you could see the GOP pick up 20 likely new seats in Congress just because of redistricting, notwithstanding all of the poll numbers that don't look so good for Republicans right now. You know, midterm, the incumbent party often loses seats and all of that. We might gain just based on new math.
Well, I mean, you've got a lot of, you know, the usual suspects out on X basically saying this really is a bit of this is a game changer. I'm going out here. Our buddy DC Drano, you know, saying, hold on, my screen's out. We didn't just save the midterms. We potentially saved the next 3+ decades of American prosperity. If Republicans control D.C. during the 2030 census, at least 10 to 15 seats will be reallocated from blue to red states. You know, and he's adding in, you know, mass deportation after the next one. I mean, this potentially is a game changer. I'm seeing a lot of people very, very excited about this. I know it is a bigger conversation. Let's take a break, Jeff, and come back and dig a little bit deeper because I pulled up and I said it in our show notes, Oregon's map. Where all roads, gosh, funnily, they lead to Portland, except for District 2, which is Cliff Bentz. But let's dig a little deeper, and then I want to talk about what your governor just did in the span of 2 days. If he can do it, can't we all do it?
Right.
right? Okay, we're going to take a break again. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds from Restoration-News.com. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We're chatting today with Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at Restoration-News.com. So we're talking gerrymandering and the SCOTUS ruling, and a lot of things seem to be kind of shifting a little bit. So I sent you guys Oregon's congressional map. Because when you look at these, I mean, I swear they look like a little kid basically took some Play-Doh and a lot of times squeezed it. You got a little blob on one end, a little blob on the other. They got a little teeny hand highway to go to somehow make it all work so that it's in favor of the Democrats. You look at Oregon, basically, almost all roads lead to Portland. And the one, of course, that we all know and remember, which used to be where I think we all lived, Congressional District 5. That got gerrymandered so that it now it kind of snakes along. It includes Portland and Bend, because Bend was always in CD2.
Yeah, and they're supposed to have some sort of geographical and population connection.
Yeah.
That's the general rule, but this all took place after the 2020 census. When Oregon got a new congressional district, they only had five before.
Right, now
they,
forever, six. Yeah.
Yeah, and so now the Democrats, with supermajorities in both houses in Oregon, took the opportunity to redraw the maps based solely on liberal population centers, and somehow Bend and Portland have a lot in common when it comes to congressional representation.
But,
it doesn't make any sense.
Like Hunter said, there's all that pesky land in between them, so let's just take a crayon and connect them up.
Well,
why not?
I think they reach out to Parker Brothers and they say, give us the most interesting map you can come up with as a puzzle and we will put it together. And I just sit here, look, when 1, 3, 6, and 5 all connect to Portland, and of course number 4 includes Eugene, you know, I'm going, yeah, no wonder we are represented 5-1 in the congressional level, yet we're at least 40-45% Republican voters across this state.
Yeah, funny how that works.
That's the point, right, Hunter, is that between 40-45% of the state is still right-leaning or registered Republican.
Yep.
So, and we get one representative out of six. So that's 12 or 16% representation for 45% of the voters in the state of Oregon. You look at CD4. In particular, that one used to be a lot more even. It was a swing district because it had both, if I remember right, it was the Medford and Eugene, right?
Yeah.
At least Roseburg and Eugene. And,
yeah, you've got a carve out now that just kind of lets it snake along the coast down towards the south.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, no, it removed all those pesky loggers from the district. So, yeah. It's obvious all of this is pure politics, right? So there's no principled reason why Republicans shouldn't take a stand and say, look, if you're going to play these games, we're going to play them back and we're going to do better at them because we have more voters. So that's what's happening in the state of Florida, for instance, right?
Right.
Is that Florida, before 2018, when DeSantis first took office as governor, the Democrats had a 1.2 million advantage in voter registration over Republicans. Now, 8 years later in 2026, the Republicans have a 1.5 million voter advantage. So now we've made a almost 3 million voter swing in 8 years. And we've become a deep red state. And so now Ron DeSantis came in and went all beast mode, to quote Denise, and in 2 days got the legislature to overwhelmingly pass these new maps based on the new SCOTUS ruling, Supreme Court ruling, that outlaws racially gerrymandered districts in southern states. So now I think there's going to be like 3 or 4 districts in the state of Florida that lean blue, and the rest of them, all, you know, 20 whatever that are left, 22 I think it is, are going to be red districts. And so that gives us a net four pickup. Then you look across the country and you see, like, you know, Texas has already redrawn their maps. Yep. It's been challenged in court. Texas is likely to win. So that's another several pickups, several seat pickup for Republicans. Indiana had the opportunity to redraw their maps and declined. I don't know why. Somehow the Republicans there got cowed by somebody. But you look at then Virginia, which tried to redraw its maps to go from, I think, an even split, six Democrat, five Republican, to 10 Democrat and one Republican. And that barely passed as a constitutional amendment on the ballot in April. But the lawsuits against it are likely to win. And you know this because the court where the lawsuit was filed refused to put an injunction in place making them enforce this new ballot measure, which means that they think that this case is going to win on the merits, which means that these new gerrymandered districts are going to be completely thrown out, likely. It still has to work its way through the courts. But the bottom line here is that with all of these mid-cycle redistricting efforts, the Republicans have the opportunity of picking up 20, maybe 25 new seats just based on new math.
Now, with Florida, the number switching too, do you think some of that has to do with blue state expats, people coming in that are strong conservatives that are coming in and sort of reinforcing things in Florida?
800 million percent I think that's exactly what's happening. I'm an example of this. And you know, the natives get all restless. You know, we got all these Yankees moving in, and they're going to start voting the way they were in New York City and whatnot. And you know, they have right to be concerned about that. But I think you're exactly right, Denise. It's blue state refugees who are sick and tired of blue state policies that are escaping to friendlier places. And, you know, if I'm any example, I'm out there raising the alarm. You guys aren't concerned enough about what's happening in blue states.
Yeah.
And you're not paying close enough attention to the things that they're actually getting past that could come here if you're not vigilant.
And that's an interesting point, because I know in Idaho, a lot of it's the same, the longtime residents. And in red states in general, a lot of people think, well, even Iowa, perhaps, we're safe. We've been this way for a long time. And so they do tend to bristle when new folks come in. But that's what you're finding. It's political refugees who are like, okay, the battlefield's not in the blue state anymore. It's in the red. And I think the smarter conservatives in the red states are starting to embrace folks who are coming in, because then you just form a bigger bulwark against, because the progressive Marxist Communist Democrats are gunning for the red states. So all of this that's happening that we're talking about, the sort of, because you look at the map of the southern United States, when the gerrymandering is taken away, there's a hell of a lot less blue. And in fact, I think if you look at a national map, there just isn't a lot of blue. America's not a leftist, progressive, Marxist, Democrat country. It's decidedly pretty center leaning right.
Yeah. Well, if you look at any of the general polling by like Gallup or Pew or those outlets, they do these annual polls. You know, are you progressive, conservative, Republican, Democrat? And routinely for the last 60, 70 years, it's usually, you know, pretty middle of the road. But, you know, if you're very liberal or very conservative, it's usually 40% conservative and 20% at best liberal. And so that points out that, you know, for a long time, when asked, most Americans are center right leaning conservative. And, you know, issue by issue, if you just pull on the issues, they support us a heck of a lot more than the Democrats.
They do. And when you can get into actually having a conversation about issues, if you're not dealing with someone who's just going to scream in your face and call you a racist.
Right.
When you can actually have a conversation, an adult conversation, you do find that there's a lot more common ground than most people think. And so you've got sort of these enclaves of progressivism, Marxism, whatever, in some of the more blue state metro areas. But again, like you said, Hunter, too, you kind of go out more, expand out into the state, and it just they're just not there.
Well, I would hope Oregon can maybe take a bit of an example of an 8-year period in the state of Florida where it went from heavy Democrat to heavy Republican, just living under the freedom that the Republican governor provided. Yeah. And yep. I'm sitting there going, we got November elections coming up. Let's vote red. Give it a shot and see what you think. Come on.
Yeah. What do you have to lose?
Yeah. What do you have to lose at this rate? The thing is with Florida, we have a hell of a lot more going on for us than Oregon does. Oregon has the natural beauty and a lot of really, natural resources and economic potential. But mm-hmm. Florida actually is a functioning economy. It's not losing jobs. It's not losing population. It's growing and creating prosperity for more of its average citizens, where Oregon is spiraling the drain economically and creating prosperity for only an elite few, and everybody else is screwed.
Yeah, unfortunately. We got about a minute left in this segment. I did want to mention, too, because you talk a lot of these districts are drawn on race lines, and I think what we're showing with polling is that that's not a metric anymore either, because you can't – people vote – as people. And so those blocks that the Democrats have heavily relied on just aren't there anymore for them.
Well, and people don't vote based on party.
Nope.
That's a huge misnomer that both parties fail to understand. People vote on the individual issues.
Exactly.
People care about their pocketbook and
yep.
public safety and immigrants stealing their jobs.
Yep.
Heck of a lot more than party platforms.
Absolutely. All right, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour news break. We will come back on the other side with more conversation with Jeff Reynolds. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, thanks everybody for hanging out with us on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds from restoration-news.com. He's the senior editor over there. He's in Florida where it's 80-something. Mm-hmm. And I can tell by your video that it's nice out and you're in like a polo shirt. So, okay, we'll get there, Hunter. That's you and
beautiful.
I will get there.
We're looking forward to it.
Come on down. Patriots are always welcome to visit.
I love it. You know what? I grew up on the East Coast and I never visited Florida. Isn't that sad?
Oh, my God.
We never made it to Disney World. I know. Well, we were kind of poor, too, so I guess that had something to do with it. Yeah. It was during the 70s when, gas lines
everybody
and all that stuff.
Poor.
Everybody was poor. All right. So we were talking, Florida is a functioning economy. Oregon has the potential to be that. I want to pivot over to a really great article over at restoration-news.com by Walter Kurt. It's called They Can't Even Flip Burgers. So this is obviously talking at the federal level. It's in response to sort of the DOGE cuts and everything that happened at USID. Jeff, I'm going to throw it to you. I read this article this morning. I love this article. I love the way Walter writes. But kind of break down what he's talking about in here. As far as how sort of public sector salaries don't really translate to the real world.
No, that's right. Really, any public job is basically, unless it's vital function to the military or state government that, we have to have, any public job steals resources out of the private sector that can't mm-hmm. be then turned into natural growing prosperity. So that's why a lot of libertarian leaning folks say that taxation is theft, because you're literally stealing money out of the economy that could be used to grow private companies and prosperity in general. So with that as sort of a context, Walter is a great guy. We've contracted with him. He's our senior fellow now, and he runs a Corruption Watch column. And he's in Michigan. He lives in Ohio, but he lives in, or he's going to Michigan quite a bit to do investigative journalism on their Medicaid fraud system. And
just in
a couple of days of pulling data from government websites, he's already found $100 million worth of Medicaid fraud, and he's just scratching the surface, you know.
This
was an op-ed in response to a New York Times op-ed telling all the sob stories of all these government workers who lost their cushy jobs and now have to go to the private sector and get real jobs and actually prove their worth to their employers. And a lot of them aren't qualified to do anything. So they're doing things like, barista at Starbucks, which I appreciate my coffee, believe me. It's not something, it's not a career track job, right? So these people have spent their entire adult lives. I mean, let's look at Ron Wyden, for instance, senator from Oregon.
All right, sure.
Supposedly from Oregon.
And
he got his start in the 70s. He graduated law school and immediately went to work for a nonprofit called the Gray Panthers, which was a support group for people in nursing homes and elderly shut-ins and that sort of thing. And he parlayed that into getting elected to the state house and then to the to Congress and then to a senator. And every single time, by the way, he exploited mail-in ballots that were sent to nursing homes and made sure that every nursing home in the state had 100% participation in the election, regardless of the mental status of the patients. He's a prime example of what Walter Curt is talking about in this op-ed that he wrote in response to the New York Times op-ed, saying that, you know, these people have never worked a day in their lives. They can't even flip burgers. The headline of the article. Should we feel sorry for these people? They chose to go into a non-productive line of work that doesn't actually advance their own careers. Whose fault is that?
Exactly. And the example he gives right out of the bat is a former senior vice president for a USAID funded nonprofit that was making $272,000 a year. And then after she lost that, she was interviewing for a $19 an hour job at the spice store. And so you flip that over to during COVID, when all of a sudden, you know, your pipe fitters and your HVAC techs and everybody else that really like has a real job. And I'm saying that, meaning, yes, they have real jobs. They were told to stay home. Yeah, they were told to suck it up. Yeah, you're not essential. You're not this. And where was the caring and the sobbing and the, you know, the hand wringing over these people? And now all of a sudden you've got this chick or whoever she is who's losing that big salary. I don't have any sympathy. I'm sorry. And then you look at Oregon. And again, the biggest sector in the job market that's growing is government.
100%. Yeah, it's a county, city and state government the biggest employer. And it has to be, because we keep driving out businesses with stupid regulations and excessive fees and all kinds of anti-business stances in public policy. So, you know, we've lost Tektronix. We've lost Boeing. Nike is building facilities elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Intel is building facilities elsewhere instead of right where their headquarters is. So, this is a huge crisis, and it can't be papered over by investment in public jobs. That's just masking all of the structural problems that Oregon puts on itself.
Well, and you can't, and they're trying to demonize Doge, which basically just went in there and uncovered just some of it. It's not even all of it. I mean, and a lot of people calling for...
Oh, no, they just scratched the surface before they stopped their efforts. And it's $215 billion. But yeah, no, and it was all wasteful. I mean, we all know that the federal government takes our tax money and spends it on crazy, insane things that we never voted for that don't do a damn thing to develop the economy. You know, all kinds of examples of, you know, transgender dance classes in South America and, right. You know, the shrimp on treadmill study and, you know, all that stuff, you know.
I forgot about that one. Thanks for reminding me of that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think that study had a little bit of merit, but it is kind of funny as an example of waste.
I just think it's adorable.
Well, I sit here and I go, you know, these blue state governments, they have to grow them as their economy shrinks, because that way you're virtually buying blue voters. You know, you give them these nice cushy jobs
between Oregon and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very stark difference between the two. And what's sad is, like you said, you've got people fleeing and they're bolstering now the red states. But so the people that are left in the blue states, they're growing government. So you've got the little, you know, the little nincompoop, the little guy with a little bit of power and a bow tie and a clipboard is going to go out and harass the farmers that are still there, or the HVAC guys that are there, or the people that wire or drive or cook. So, I mean, then you're going to have more people leaving, because it's always like with the old tax the rich mentality, Zoran Mondami. Pretty soon, the people that can leave do, and then it comes down until it is you, the average citizen.
And then they're going to put a billionaire's tax on and a tax for leaving the city. Yeah, okay.
Well, I just sit here, and when every time you mention Wyden, I go back to, you know, Mom Dami's video from the, you know, out in front of the billionaire's house. I go, why didn't you do that for Wyden's house? He lives in Oregon, supposedly. You know, air quotes, lives in Oregon. So why didn't you do it in front of Wyden's house? He would have congratulated you, given you a high five to point that out, obviously.
He's actually probably right around the corner from Gracie Mansion. So it's probably a lot more convenient than you think, Hunter.
Wyden's got the right point of view, though. Mm. So he didn't get that scary extreme close-up from the socialist with the slimy snake smile. Sorry, he didn't get it.
Well, I saw a little clip of Katie Wilson, the mayor of Seattle, when asked about businesses leaving Seattle, she's pretty much said, well, bye. Yeah, you're going to learn a quick lesson.
And that's not the first time a DSA mayor has said that, too.
Right.
And, you know, AOC famously got in trouble for making a stink about an Amazon facility in her district that was going to create like 10,000 jobs or 5,000 jobs. And she's like, we don't want the corporate influence here in Brooklyn. Like, really?
Come on. Did anybody ask Brooklynites?
It's the commercial center of the world. You don't want corporate America there. Okay.
And that's the MO. That's the way they operate in the blue states. And so you've got a lot of people that are just really getting sick of it. And like you said, they're picking up and moving. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, we want Doge to come to Oregon. And, you know, we had a conversation with a writer a couple of weeks ago where everybody keeps saying, let's tag Nick Shirley. Well, you be the Nick Shirley. Everybody can do this and you can dig in. Walter Kurt is digging in. Anybody can do this. We all have an internet connection.
Right. Nick Shirley's 23 years old and has a cell phone. He has no particular, I mean, he's a great dude, but I don't think he has a particular talent in digging up data. He just looks at the data, goes to the address and says, hey, what's up? I mean, and that's pretty effective, right?
Clearly. All right, we'll finish this conversation on the other side of the break. We're going to take our last break. Again, we're talking with Jeff Reynolds. He's senior editor at restoration-news.com, and you are listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
All righty, everybody. We are wrapping up our broadcasting week and our conversation with Jeff Reynolds. So another headline over at restoration-news.com. America is not racist. How the Southern Poverty Law Center con infiltrated every power pillar in the U.S., of course, SPLC, with the indictments coming down. Most of us who've been paying attention could have told you they were all BS. Mm-hmm. that they were just making it up. I mean, we had so little, really so little racism in the United States that they had to fund it and fluff it up and make it seem like it was something so that they could fight it. I mean, it's unreal.
It's completely unreal, but we all knew this instinctually way along, right?
Yep.
You could tell that, you know, anytime you had a, you know, like a Tea Party rally or any mm-hmm. sort of, you know, like a Second Amendment rally, mm-hmm. you'd always have the crazy fringers show up and do their Lyndon LaRouche stuff or show
yes.
Obama with a Hitler mustache or,
Jeff,
you know, just random crazy stuff, right?
How many rallies have we gone to, did we go to? And every time, I know I was one, you probably too, have a media person because whoever the media is there, they're going to find the one loon in the bunch. And
right.
that's who makes the evening news. For years yep. and years and years, every single rally I've ever been to, and you too.
But yeah, no, 100%, and it's weird how they always knew there would be somebody there, right?
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, and this, if you remember the Patriot Front,
yep.
that group,
yep.
Like they came out and did some white nationalist rallies, and you know, they were all masked up and carrying flags, and
they were in their khakis,
marching in unison.
Yeah.
Yeah, and their khakis. Yeah, and everybody immediately on the right, 100% of the yep. right went, hey, look, a bunch of feds.
Exactly.
Right, because we knew it was a false flag. Nobody knew who these people were. We didn't know any of these people. I've come across, like, I knew who Patriot Prayer was. I knew who the 3%ers were. I knew who
yep.
The other one.
Oath Keepers.
Yeah, Oath Keepers. I knew who was in the Oath Keepers. You know,
yep.
And I didn't know any of these people. I'm like, oh, they're clearly feds, right? So, but now that we know that they've been funding them to invent racism where it doesn't exist,
mm-hmm.
the entire fundraising structure falls apart. And that's really what it was a mechanism to keep racism in the news so that they can continue the fundraising grift that's been going on for 30 years, 40, no, more than that. SPLC's been around, for what,
40
80 years?
Years
or something?
Yeah.
And they've been around for a long time, and they were started to provide legal services to poor minorities who couldn't afford to hire a lawyer to defend their own rights.
Yeah.
So that's why they were started. But they stopped providing those services in the 80s when
yeah.
they realized they could make more money by putting out hate maps and tracking supposed racist incidents across America.
Yeah, when you start having groups like Moms for Liberty being added there, and of course Charlie Kirk and TPUSA were on that
sure.
list.
100%. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've got a lot of this, and again, it's manufactured, and so we're starting to see that a lot of the narratives that have been put, especially during the Biden administration, the very fine people narrative that they kept trying to put out there was based on what was being funded with the Charlotte, that all that is coming out, and
that's
so.
Right.
You're looking at that, and there's a number of people. You've got your writer over at Restoration News, Beth, and then, of course, our favorite, Batya Ungar Sargosa, and I don't want to mangle her name. I love her. She's another one, and she's got, I think, a News Nation program. She's been out breaking it down, and it's all just falling apart. You pull one little thread, and the whole thing unravels.
Right, and so those two articles that you're referencing are basically the same article talking about how SPLC and other leftist establishment organizations put out these phony stats about who's committing more political violence in America. And you know, they were all out in force again after the White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting, where you know, it's the left that's or it's the right that's committing the vast majority of political violence. And when you break down the stats, it's laughable how they think that you're going to believe this stuff when it's all. I mean, one of the main reports that they quote is from a University of Cincinnati professor who is an avowed Antifa member and violent overthrow revolutionary. So it's not as if he's exactly unbiased and soberly looking at the stats and calling balls and strikes. So all of this stuff, all of those stats are completely manufactured, and they're put together and packaged in a way to make the right look bad when in fact, it's pretty clear that the left has a political violence problem. And when you poll them, more Democrats than Republicans by a couple of orders of magnitude believe that political violence is justified.
Well, my understanding is, I kind of went through these things, you know, they exclude things like the assassination of Charlie Kirk and the multiple attempts on President Trump's life, but they made sure to include like 10 or so instances of Aryan Brotherhood drug dealers. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, they have really no political bias whatsoever. They just want to sell their drugs. And if violence is something they use it.
Right. It's drug violence, not political violence. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that they excluded was the entire Summer of Love and all of the riots that were going on. Those weren't considered political by people who participated in them and then put the stats together.
Now, wait a minute. January 6th.
Right. Okay.
There. Okay.
And what else?
Hang on. Checking my notes here. Nothing.
Right. Yeah. See, even if you take January 6th for what they say it was, which is a grossly overstated case.
Correct.
Even if you take it at face value of what they're saying, that's one incident.
That's one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Well, I always look at any of these events and I sit here and go, if it's conservatives out there rallying and things get out of control, I'm not expecting to see people in masks, but the moment I see a group of guys in khakis and masks and the matching hats holding their flags, I'm going, this is as made up as can be, because a true conservative, I've yet to meet one that wears a mask out in public.
Oh, one of the big rallies I went to in 2022 was a medical freedom moms and everybody out at the Capitol in Oregon, which precisely to reject wearing masks.
It was an anti-mask.
And it was well attended. And again, as we've all attended these rallies in the past, right-wing rallies tend to be, you know, pretty boring. There's people holding signs. There's lots of little kids. Not a lot happens except when you get the one or two weirdo infiltrators.
Pick up all the trash.
Amen. And we always document that, too, because that's always the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the leftists turn it into Woodstock when it's done. Yeah. You know, just crap and trash everywhere.
So I'm hoping that, you know, these narratives are starting to penetrate the people that aren't necessarily paying attention, because I think that's most Americans. They're not as plugged in as, say, we are and a lot of other people and people that we hang out with. That are starting to see this. But I think the Southern Poverty Law Center thing blowing up might have a broader reach than just sort of the nerdy wonks that pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on like that where it doesn't make the news because it doesn't fit the narrative, but things are happening that should be reported that aren't. The SPLC kind of destroying the facade of believability of the left. That's a big deal, and that's going to have huge ripple effects, and it's not going to make the news, and it's going to get out of the news cycle as quick as they can get it out. Another thing that's been going on, started a few years back, is all of the revivals and tent meetings and Christian conversions that have been going on. Catholic Church, for one example, has been setting records for the number of people that are converting, and mostly young people too. These are Gen Z folks that are converting and finding their faith, you know. So and they're doing it in record numbers, and it doesn't make the news.
No, it doesn't. I think revival potentially is in the air. I think, you know, a lot of it is revival or bust. We're just about out of time with you, Jeff. Again, we're talking with Jeff Reynolds. We're going to link up all these stories because, again, these are really excellent articles, really great writers that you've got in your stable over there. I know you produce a lot of them as well. And so we always enjoy having you on, Jeff, and getting your insights on all this stuff, because there's always plenty to talk about and lots going on. And that is it for us. So, again, I will link everything up out there. Thanks for joining us this week. We got great shows for you next week. Go out, enjoy this weather. It's going to be gorgeous. So enjoy it. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, live local talk that matters to you. exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.